Good morning to you all. It's certainly good to be with you today. We have a special Sabbath today where we get to honor our graduating seniors. It's so very exciting to see so many of you young people about to enter into a new phase of life. The college phase, the work phase, the adult phase. Some of you I've seen grown from small children to where you are today. You know, my family and I moved here to Dallas 15 years ago, and perhaps some of you whose families have been here that long, well, we've known you since you were toddlers. And here you are, you're ready and eager to step out into the world. And it's a beautiful world out there. It's a wonderful, exciting world, but it's also a troubled world, and it's a complicated world, as you all know. You've been exposed to many of these complications already in your own teenage society, you know, in school, online. Many of your social interactions, your social groups that you found yourself in. You know it's a troubled and complicated world. Well, what I'm going to give you today in the way of a sermonette is a simple piece of advice. And as you step out into this world, I want you to adopt what I would call a biblical worldview. A biblical worldview. Now, what I mean by that is that you view the world through a certain lens. And it doesn't mean that you have to view things from what some might call a closed mind or a narrow mind. It simply means that you place a filter over through which you view things. You know, everyone does this. Don't let people accuse you of having a closed or narrow mind. Everyone has a lens by which they view the world. It's a personal philosophy. You know, it's a belief system. The way you were raised. The way you've come to simply view the world. And as you step into the world of higher education, you'll find that academia has largely adopted a view of the world through the lens of secular humanism. And everything they look at, everything they view is interpreted through that lens. You know, it's not science. It's not absolute fact. It's a philosophy. It's a belief system. It's a system that influences how they interpret the facts that they're presented with, how they view the sciences. Secular humanists may think that they are much more open-minded than their biblically based peers. But when challenged, more often than not, you'll find that a mind that is closed to everything that doesn't square with their secular worldview. And if you adopt a biblical worldview and they sense that that's where you're coming from, well, you'll discover just how open-minded the secular worldview can be. And so I'm telling you that you can adopt a biblical worldview while still managing to keep an informed and open mind on just about any issue. Just because you think that you're right about something and that you're biblically based in your rightness, as it were, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are right about that. And so rather than having a dogmatic or immovable point of view, well, what you need to do is look at the world in curiosity, in wonder, realizing that there's so much mystery out there, there are so many things that you don't know. And in your search for truth, you simply drop the visor. You drop the visor down that allows you to see things through a biblical lens. It's a biblical worldview, and it can be applied to anything. Let me give you an example. Several years ago, we were attending the Feast of Tabernacles out at the Bend, Oregon feast site. And I don't remember what type of tour we were on. We were getting a tour of something somewhere. And somewhere out there in what is called Oregon's high desert. Now, this high desert's average elevation is about 4,000 feet above sea level, while the summit reaches somewhere around 10,000 feet above sea level. Now, that's high, right? Denver, Colorado is the Mile High City, and it sits at 5,280 feet above sea level. So we're talking between 4,000 to 10,000 feet above sea level. So anyway, this tour guide was pointing out some interesting geological features, and I guess he was describing the existence of fossilized sea creatures found in the area. And his assertion was that this entire area used to be covered by a shallow sea. Millions of years ago, there existed a shallow sea in this area that sits between 4,000 to 10,000 feet above sea level. And I can remember saying to whoever I was with, it was probably my wife, but I don't remember. But I remember saying, well, isn't it interesting that no matter where we go, everywhere we go, there's a tour guide describing the natural features to us. We find that the area was at one time covered by a shallow sea. Everywhere we go in the North American continent, there's evidence of the place being underwater at one time or another. Now, this tour guide was telling us that a shallow sea existed in Oregon's high desert millions and millions of years ago. Okay, you know, that's interesting. I'm not discounting the theory. Maybe it was, you know. But when I drop my biblical worldview visor down over my eyes, and I see it from a biblical worldview, I can still acknowledge that maybe he was right. You know, maybe there was a shallow sea here millions of years ago. But I know of another time when there was a shallow sea there. And perhaps it wasn't all that shallow. And it wasn't millions of years ago. It was about 4,000 years ago. With absolute certainty in my own mind, I can tell you that Oregon's high desert was covered with water 4,000 years ago. So you see, with my open mind, I can accept his assertion. My biblical worldview allows me to accept his assertion. Because in my biblical worldview, I can see the earth being millions and perhaps billions of years old. You know, because we have a theory. We have a theory that a long time passed between Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1 and verse 2. We call this the gap theory. And so I can accept that there was a shallow sea in eastern Oregon 2 million years ago. But what the secular humanists cannot accept, they will not accept, is that 4,000 years ago, this earth experienced a cataclysmic event that destroyed all life off the planet, except for 8 human beings, with the parent animals of the entire animal kingdom. And they were kept through divine intervention, through divine protection, they were kept alive in a wooden box that floated on the surface of the water. Let's turn over to 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter, the third chapter. The secular humanist refuses to accept the possibility that a Noachian flood was a real and literal event that happened approximately 4,000 years ago. And with all academia largely influenced by secular humanism, your entire field of academic geology refuses to acknowledge perhaps the most influential and the most profound geologic event of Earth's history. Without a biblical worldview, what filter are they left with? How do they interpret what they're looking at? The same geological features that you're looking at with your biblical worldview visor pulled down, well, they're looking at it through the lens of secular humanism, which does not allow them to see the world through anything that can be interpreted as divine intervention or the supernatural. 2 Peter chapter 3, let's start reading in verses 3 through 6. Knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, and saying, "Where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. For this they willfully forget." They willfully forget this. In other words, they forget this on purpose. "For this they willfully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water." Mankind as a whole has rejected the divine intervention, the divine revelation of their Creator God, the eternal living God. And as a result, they have willfully forgotten about what happened to this earth 4,000 years ago. Young people, when you go out into the world, I want you to adopt a biblical worldview. Keep an open mind. Be curious. Be respectful. Allow your personal views to be challenged. But filter your perception through God's word. You know, several years ago, it was one of the first times, perhaps the first time, I tried to get serious about losing weight. And what an uphill battle that's been. So don't let me get into that. But I've had various peaks and valleys with that struggle over the years. But this one particular time, I had learned about the Atkins diet. And I think that might have been one of the first fad diets that I really looked into. I didn't look very far. Because when I saw where Atkins was teaching people to avoid fruit, and not just some fruit, but all fruit. All fruit. Avoid fruits and live on a diet that is mostly meat. And it was all meats, you know, pork, shellfish, you name it. Live on that, but avoid fruit. You see, that didn't square too well with my biblical worldview. Now, first of all, common sense should tell you something wasn't quite right about that. You don't need a biblical worldview to realize that. But God gave us fruit to eat. And he told us that there are certain types of animal flesh that we shouldn't eat. Oh, you'll get skinny eating a diet of mostly meat. But you can be skinny and still not be healthy. Atkins didn't fit into my biblical worldview, and I dismissed it. Now, maybe I jumped the gun. You know, maybe my assumptions were too quick. You know, again, I've got an open mind. I'm willing to listen. Some of you might love the Atkins diet. And if so, you know, come and talk to me and tell me if you think I'm off base on that assertion. It was a few years later when I first learned about the concept of gluten intolerance. Now, I've never heard the word gluten before, but suddenly we discovered there's this epidemic called gluten intolerance. And it's not just a small percentage of people. We're talking, what, 20 to 30% of the human population is now gluten intolerant? Now, I'm guessing on that figure. I don't know what the percentage is. I just know it's a lot. And my biblical worldview was having a problem with that, because I knew that God not only gave us grains to eat, but he built an entire religious system around the harvesting of those grains. You know, his whole plan of salvation is revealed in blueprint format through festivals of grain harvests. And so there's no way that one-third of the human population is allergic to wheat. There's just no way. But what did I say? Keep an open mind. You might think that you've got a solid biblical worldview on a subject, but then some new fact comes to light that allows you to see things, again, through your proper filter of that biblical worldview, but you see things based on a new light, based on new information. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 19. Here in Leviticus 19, we discover a law that God gave to Israel. It involves how to plant and grow and yield crops. Let's notice verse 19 of Leviticus 19. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your livestock breed with another kind. You shall not sow your field with mixed seed, nor shall a garment of mixed linen and wool come upon you. Okay, back about 70 or 80 years ago, it was estimated that based on the rate of the human population growth, there wasn't going to be enough food to feed the growing population. And that by the 1970s, we were going to be deep into famine. So in the 1940s, an Iowa farmer by the name of Norman Borlaug came on the scene. Let me read you a brief excerpt from an article in a journal called The Scientific American about Norman Borlaug. Norman Borlaug went from a small farm in Iowa to feeding half the world thanks to his lifelong interest in tinkering with the genetic design of wheat. In 1944, Borlaug, trained as a plant pathologist, left the U.S. for Mexico to fight stem rust, a fungus that infects wheat. He and his colleagues spent the next decade crossing thousands of strains of wheat from across the globe, ultimately developing a high-yielding, disease-resistant variety. As a result of this increase in food production, millions of lives were saved, and Borlaug was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970. Okay, so well-intentioned Norman Borlaug, he prevented the world from going into famine and by the 1970s by creating a strain of wheat that allowed each stalk to yield about 10 times what a normal stalk of wheat would produce. Hooray for Norman Borlaug, right? I mean, I'm sure it was a very noble contribution to humanity. He saved millions, perhaps billions of lives. But how did he do it? By tinkering with the genetic design of wheat? By ignoring Leviticus chapter 19 and mixing the seeds of thousands and thousands of varieties from across the globe until he created a strain that did something to wheat that would never occur in nature on its own? Yes, he saved millions of people from starving. But here we are, 50 years later, and one-third of the human population is allergic to wheat. Okay, now my biblical worldview is able to see that gluten intolerance is a real thing. Yes, one-third of humanity can be allergic to wheat, if in fact what happened is that we violated the laws of God to create an unnatural version of wheat. God says don't mess with the seeds. And so the problem is not with people being allergic to what God created for food. The problem is that through my biblical worldview visor, I can see that our food supply has been compromised due to violating God's laws, which God says he gave to us for our good. And so I'm able to modify my biblical worldview with new facts that came to light, which gives me an even better biblical worldview. Believe in the rock-solid authenticity of the Scriptures. Be supremely confident in that. But be humble enough and be open-minded enough to realize that your understanding might be a little flawed, might be short-sighted. There are so many other complicated issues of the world that we could talk about when we drop our biblical worldview visor over our eyes. You want to talk about abortion, same-sex marriage, the transgender debate. We can have that conversation. We don't have to be rude and obnoxious. We don't have to be mean and judgmental. But we can certainly view those topics through the lens of a biblical worldview. And I promise you that it'll work to your advantage. Well, young people, we're so happy and excited for you to enter into our adult world. It's been a treasure and an honor to watch you grow up from toddlers into fine young men and women. We wish you all the very best that life has to offer. Just try to remember this one simple piece of advice. Keep a biblical worldview.